Okay, well, this is the hour. We'll take your phone calls, maybe even your stories with Jeff Belanger, and we'll do all that next on Coast to Coast AM. Jeff, I've got to ask you about Transylvania out there in Romania before we go to calls. The home of Dracula. Is that place really scary? I mean, that whole region.
Well, yeah, sure. I mean, Bran Castle and Vlad the Impaler, Vlad Tepes was quite the legend. I mean, my goodness, his own kingdom imprisoned him. They were so afraid of him. But that stuff leaves a mark. And Bran Castle, which is probably one of the most closely tied locations still left to Vlad the Impaler, said to be haunted by Vlad himself. Although pretty much anywhere that he went, they claim his ghost still roams, which is interesting. I don't know if he can be in more than one place at once, but his legend sure can be. That's for certain. And I think we have such a fascination with the whole vampire notion. Bram Stoker, of course, made him sexy and powerful. But long before Bram Stoker and before Vlad, vampires were actually pretty horrible creatures. They were the walking dead. They were consumption victims.
Nosferatu, right?
Right. They were people that fed on the living. Yeah, you didn't want to be one. They weren't sexy like Twilight, you know. They were not attractive at all. And that's another legend that, you look at that throughout the years. Even in Rhode Island and nearby, near where I live, In the 1890s, there was a case of a vampire that was exhumed from Exeter Cemetery, and Mercy Brown. She was dug up. Her father took her heart out of her body, burned it into ashes, and fed the ashes to his son because he believed that she was a vampire. And 1890s was kind of modern times. The Providence Journal wrote an article about it saying, look at what these crazy bumpkins in southern Rhode Island are doing. But he was desperate. His family was wiped out by tuberculosis. He believed there was a vampire afoot. And then, he did this act to his daughter because he thought it was the only option. But then, of course, Bram Stoker made them sexy, and now we've got Twilight and everything else, but they weren't always.
Okay, you've got a full bank of calls here, Jeffrey, so let's take them. Cleveland, Ohio we go. First-time caller, Rob, you're up with us on Coast to Coast. Hi, Rob, yes. Go ahead.
Hello. I was going to ask you about the Mansfield Prison where they filmed Shawshank Redemption, but I'm going to change my mind at the last second and ask you if you ever heard of the burning of the Gore Orphanage in Vermilion, Ohio, or the haunted Franklin House in Cleveland, Ohio.
You mean Franklin Castle?
Franklin Castle, yes.
Yeah, no, I know that one, sure, yeah. I spoke to the owner not that long ago, actually.
They have hidden passages and secret rooms where people were murdered.
Yeah, right. Yeah, and these places, isn't it funny how we all hear about them and want to know more about them? I believe Franklin Castle, I think he's opening up for touring, if I'm not mistaken, but don't quote me on that. But it is one of the well-known haunts there that, secret societies and all kinds of other conspiracies that blend on top of the ghostly legends. Yeah, good stuff.
So what would possess somebody to go to a bread and breakfast? Well, that's all fine, right?
Mm-hmm,
it's
sure.
Romantic. But in a haunted place, or in some cases, you spend the night in that room where something happened.
Yeah, and Lizzie Borden in Fall River, Massachusetts, the Lizzie Borden Bed and Breakfast. That's they've got a ton of supernatural tourists that want to stay in the room where the murder happened. That want to sit, on the couch where Mr. Borden was hacked to death. I think it's our nature to want to legend trip, to want to explore these places, and this gives you the opportunity to do so. You can have the place to yourself for the evening, for a price. And maybe have that experience, maybe touch something. I think it's funny, too, that I call it most famous phenomena, where we're always trying to attach a label to whatever might be there. You go down into Virginia, where there's so many bed and breakfasts that say, George Washington slept here. And they're old, and some of them seem to be haunted, and they say, yeah, it's the ghost of George Washington, who stayed there one night in 1789 and is going to haunt there forever. It's not the drunk gardener who fell off the roof in 1940. It's George Washington. But we feel safer if we can at least label that strange knock on the wall. It's George Washington. He'd never hurt us. It's okay.
Next up, we go to west of the Rockies in Chico, California. It's Nancy's turn. Hey, Nance.
Hi, how are you?
Good.
I have a good ghost story, or at least I'm pretty sure it is. I had to drive to work, and it was about 2:30 in the morning, and it's in the country, to where I was going through, and my headlights were on bright. There was no other cars, and I saw this person walking ahead on the road to the right. So I slowed way down, and I saw this girl. Her hair was, like, all messed up. She had long hair, but it was kind of all messed up. All she had on was a T-shirt, and she was barefooted. And I'm thinking, oh, my gosh, this is weird. And then I went past her, and I thought, well, maybe something happened to her. So I called 911, and I told the dispatcher what I saw. I got a quarter mile down the road, and the sheriff was right in that area, so I could see him down the road. I saw him with his spotlight, and he was searching all around, and there's no trees, mind you. There's no buildings that she could have, you know, ran behind. And I saw him turn around in the middle of the road, and I still had the dispatcher on the line, and she said, well, where did you see her? And I said, I told her right exactly, you know, right down the road there. And she says, well, he's saying he's not seeing anybody. And I'm like, I said to her, oh, please don't tell me that. I go, because I know what I saw. And they didn't find anybody. So I just, that just really freaked me out, because I was thinking maybe something had happened to her and I was trying to help her, and, you know, thinking maybe somebody had mugged her or raped her or something, and they didn't see anything, and I never heard anything back. So every time I have to drive in the middle of the night down that road, I think, please don't let me see anybody. Please don't let me see anybody. You know, but when you were talking about really quickly, people that you know that have passed on, I just want to say I do believe they are around us and they do hear us and see us, because my nephew was killed 2 years ago, and I had a hard time getting through that grieving process. And one night I was laying in bed and I was on my side, and I swear to you, he whispered in my ear my name twice. And I seriously thought when I rolled over, I would see him there. But of course, no, but he heard me and he was there. So it makes you feel good that they are around you.
Yeah, what a nice experience. And Nancy, what a great phantom hitchhiker story you shared. Those kind of accounts come all over the country. I was in Chicago last weekend, where I think the most famous in the United States, the most famous phantom hitchhiker, Resurrection Mary on Archer
yes.
Avenue on the south side of Chicago. People drive down the street right by Resurrection Cemetery. They see a girl walking, they pull over to see if she needs help. She disappears, or maybe she gets in the car and disappears. That legend goes back 60 years, and it's wonderful. There's one in Massachusetts. They're everywhere. And we stand now, gosh, one in Chico, California. Thank you, Nancy.
That is a freaky story, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely.
Next up, we go to our wild card line. It's Tim in San Diego. Hey, Tim, go ahead.
Yeah, hey, guys. I used to live in Rogue River, Oregon. And I lived in this house that when we first moved in, you could hear some menacing laughing, sound like little girls or something laughing upstairs. And every year we would have, I lived there 3 years, and around November for 3 days, we would have cars that would, and we lived on a complete straightaway, which, you know, cars could have crashed anywhere, but they would come through our white picket fence. And they'd flip over and land upright and in the same almost exact spot, and then a 3 day period. And it was in November, and it happened every year like clockwork. And then inside the house, my mom's boyfriend at the time had been touched by something. And I just heard laughing. And after that, I ended up getting cancer. They gave me 3 months to live. And I became psychic, I guess, and so now the work I do now, I go in and out of people's houses, and I'm a carpenter, and I'll smell a scent that smells sort of like roses or potpourri, with a little dust thrown on top, and then I call it the smell of death, and then what happens is telepathically the people will talk to me that have died, and then I'll talk to the loved one who's still living at the house, and I'll ask them if they knew a Mary, and they'll say, yes, that was my wife. And then the hair raises on the back of my neck, and I just don't even know why or how. But
it does. It happens for you.
It just happens. I don't know. I don't even know why, and I've never used it for anything. It just – stuff just happens. And so I know – and then I had my mom pass away, and she – came and physically visited me. and it was a life-changing experience. And so anyway, there's, as far as I know there's stuff out there, and it's 100% and it's real.
When you least expect it, Jeff, these things seem to happen.
Yeah, no, boy, what a string of profound experiences for Tim there. Yeah, it's I guess it's like falling in love. You know, if you're looking for it, you may not find it. It hits you when you're not looking.
Should you use that gift that he has, Jeff, or just let it happen when it does?
I have a hard time relating to psychic abilities. I don't believe I am. We all have intuition and gut feelings and stuff like that, but I don't believe I have that. So it's tough for me to know what to do. I guess if I thought I had something like that, I'd want to use it to wherever it could lead. So that's a tough one for me.
Let's go to Long Beach, California. It's Tuesday. Yes, it is Tuesday. Hi, Tuesday.
Hey, Tuesday.
How are you?
I'm good. Tuesday, I've known Tuesday for years. Out on the Queen Mary.
Yes, absolutely. In fact, Jeff helped me get started in my writing because he's such an excellent writer.
He sure is.
You know, I want to make a point on there. You know, it used to be in the olden days where we would blame hauntings on the Ouija boards or some kind of candle magic or some kind of Wiccan or Pagan or something like that, you know. And today it's really changed on that. I mean, we do still have some people that want to go out and play with that. But, you know, really we've gotten to the point where we're looking at, you know, whether the locations are on faults or they're on ley lines or they're on some kind of electrical lines and stuff where, you know, we have a little bit more of a broader, maybe even scientific explanation on why hauntings pop up in certain areas. You know, it's not always that there has to be somebody that died on the land or, you know, and I use my own house as an example because the fact is we really have not pinpointed why we have so much ghost activity in the house, but yet there's all kinds of things that have come up throughout the years that we can add to it that might even get us closer to the equation of why some areas are more susceptible to hauntings than others.
I think we always want to know why, and that's what drives us crazy. It drives me crazy at night. You sit there and you think, you know, why is this happening? Why does it happen in some places and not others? And it forces us to look for every reason. And that's where, you know, some of the equipment and things like that people are using, you know, maybe that's helpful. Maybe there is high electromagnetic activity in a certain location. Maybe there's some high earth energies coming through. Maybe there's a tragedy. Maybe it's something else. And boy, you feel like if you can take enough items off the table, what you're left with might be close to the mark, and that's what we have to do in paranormal research. You all you can do is remove things from the table and see what's left as you go through all the reasons.
What do you think of EVPs, electronic voice phenomena?
I can't even spell EVP, George. I think they're really intriguing, but I've heard so many. There's just a few when they're in context of what people are talking about. You know, if it's just, you know, these, you know, they say, see, it said my grandmother's here. Really? You know, I didn't hear that at all. I just heard a muffled garble. But when they're what they call class A, crystal clear, no one can argue about what's being said. And of course, we're trusting the person that they did indeed pick this up. And it's in context to whatever's being discussed. That's really interesting. I don't know how to reproduce that. And I think it's great evidence. Proof, you know, maybe not, but definitely evidence.
Deborah, Nashville, Tennessee. You're up on Coast to Coast.
Hey.
Hey,
hi,
Deborah.
Jeff. Hi, George.
Hi.
Say, I was 4 years old, and I remember this because my brother was newborn, and they just brought him in the house. And I'm going to try to condense this, but there was living room, dining room, kitchen, and then my bedroom was way in the back of the house. It was very, very, very dark. And I remember at 4 years old, you know the old hag thing?
Yep.
Oh, it's so real. It's so real. I remember being flipped around in my bed with my feet up on the pillow. And I remember seeing it. And I just, for a little while, I just kept peeking my eyes open just a little bit, you know, to see if it was still there.
Yeah,
I mean, there was.
Was
no pressure, no nothing, but it was there. It was there, and it was real. And the next thing I remember, and I don't know if it was that night or a couple nights later, But there was this bright, bright light in the corner of my room, and it didn't illuminate the room because the whole room was dark, but it was so bright, almost white. And it was almost like it was draped, like in robes, kind of like the, I don't want to say it was the Virgin Mary, but kind of in robes like that.
Right.
And I've always wondered, was that like a guard? Because I remember I just crawled up and just went to sleep. It was so peaceful, and I wasn't afraid at all. But was that a guardian angel? And I remember, like, throughout my life, I prayed and prayed for this to come back, and it never has. And I still, to this day, and I'm 54, I cannot sleep in a dark room alone. I just can't.
Deborah, when did the old hags episode stop? You said they when you were 4 years old.
It happened one time when I was 4 years old, but it's like it happened yesterday.
Yeah, no, and that's the thing about these experiences. You know, they're so powerful that they burn themselves into your permanent memory. And it's like that with any profound human experience. You know, a car accident where you're scared that you might die, a great injury. You remember every detail of it. There's an evolutionary reason we remember that detail, because you can pass that information on and not get into the situation again, and your offspring cannot get into that situation if you can pass that information. And so these powerful experiences, like that old hag that Deborah's describing, of course you remember it. You remember it your whole life because it's a big one, you know. And that fear raised your senses. It got your adrenaline flowing, and wow, what a thing! And maybe your guardian angel didn't come back because maybe you haven't needed it like that ever since.
Jeff, do you ever get people talking about the ghostly apparitions coming out of closets?
Oh, yeah, sure. My gosh. Hey, to this day, I'm not going to say I've seen it all, but I've seen quite a bit. I still keep my closet door shut at night, you know. No apology there. Shut the door.
Do you let your hand, your arm dangle over the bed?
I don't mind my arm, but not my foot. Isn't that weird?
That is weird.
You can get dragged down by either one, but, you know, my arm, not so, I don't worry. I guess I feel upper body strength maybe better than lower. I don't know. But, yeah, it's these silly things that we hang on to.
Let's go to Scranton, Pennsylvania. East of the Rockies, Kyle, you're up.
Hey, I just wondered if you've ever heard any stories about hauntings at Auschwitz or any other death camps?
Yeah, no, I have, sure.
Good thing, yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, again, these places where horrible atrocities and tragedies took place. And again, I think it's something that has a lot more to do with the living tuning into that and remembering history, demanding to be remembered. And it should be remembered. That is something that we should never forget. Not only how bad people can suffer, but how horrible humans can treat other humans. And that's one of the important roles of talking about ghostly legends. It's not disrespectful. In fact, it can be a powerful societal tool to remember historic events just like that. And I have heard stories from Auschwitz and from other death camps, over in Europe.
You ever participate in a séance, Jeff?
I have, and I've we've done the table tipping. We've done them all. I prefer to be an observer just because that's kind of my role as I see it. I was a journalist. That's how I got started.
When we come back, let's talk about the seance. Tell us what you witnessed and also if you've ever been part of an exorcism, for example. I'm George Norrie, back in a moment with your calls and Jeff Belanger on Coast to Coast AM. Well, it's time to pick up After Dark as a Christmas present. Just put it in the old stocking, 1-888-727-5505 is the phone number, or you can order After Dark online at coasttocoastam.com. Jeff, is there a most haunted place that you've been to?
Oh, man. I don't think that's fair to say.
No, it's not, is it?
It's like, what's your favorite child?
Yeah.
You know? I mean, you have one, but you would never say it.
Or people say to me, who's your favorite guest? They all are.
Right, of course, yeah. But and the other thing too is you can go to a haunt on one day and nothing can happen. I mean that happens all the time. And you go to a place that's not so active most of the time, but you hit it on a good day and you say this must be the most haunted place on earth. I wish we could predict it. I wish we could tell you when and where. If we could, boy, we'd be calling all the news crews and having a press conference, wouldn't we?
All right, let's go to some more calls. Let's go to Las Vegas, Nevada. Sergio is our first-time caller. Hey, Sergio, go ahead.
Hey there. I just felt compelled to share my story, my near-death experience, when
sure.
he mentioned, you know, that he finally, through research, came to a conclusion that there is something that happens after we... People mention the term die, but the truth is you just wake up, and the truth is you're just going to wake up in heaven. I guess it's hard to explain and whatnot. But I guess I'll just tell you what happened, and you guys can decide for yourself.
Okay.
Well, I was 17. I'm 26 now. I was at my friend's 18th birthday party, and I was a party animal back then. Used to work at the Hilton. You know, I used to make good money. We used to spend it all, you know, doing what young people do. You know, bad stuff, basically, drinking and whatnot. So I get there. We're, you know, messed up. We buy hallucinogenic mushrooms. I'm sure you guys know what those are and heard stories of them and whatnot. So, yeah, I accidentally overdosed on them. You know, I didn't know what amount of mushrooms you should take. So I ended up taking more than a handful, which anybody will tell you with experience that that's way too much. So anyways, you know, I'm there, blah, 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 whatever. You know, my system overloads, I fall to the floor. And the way people die, you know, my grandma died last year, and even though I haven't talked to the family about how she died because they were there, on her deathbed when she died, you know, I can almost tell you how everyone dies. I already know without asking them how her last moments were because I experienced those moments. So basically what's going to happen when most people die, you know, naturally on their deathbed, they're just going to, you know, they're going to hear spirits calling them. They're going to freak out in their last moment. And their last gasp of breath, last gasp of life that they're going to take, that's when the spirit exits you and you're just going to see them looking up at the sky, which in fact is looking up at their...
Sergio, is that transition almost instant? Like there's no delay? You go from, you know, breathing, you're dead, to the spirit world like that?
Yeah, you can just feel something. You can feel the spirits calling you, which is what happened to me. You can feel them, you know, wanting you and trying to reach you, trying to get a hold of you. But I don't, like I said, that's what happened to me. And it is, it's just a gasp. It's just a big, your last breath of air of life that you take. That's your spirit. That's when your spirit leaves you. You just, and you see it and it leaves you and you see it looking back at you and you know you're just a shell because it's just a dream. You know, hard to explain, but, that's what's going to happen. I'll go on with my story. So I fell, you know, to the floor, collapsed, took my last gasp of life, saw my spirit leave. You know, next minute I wake up in heaven. I was up there for, I'd say, about 30 seconds. You know, St. Paul or St. Peter wakes me up or whatever. You know, God, I wake up because God is saying, send him back. It's not his time. Send him back. It's not his time. So what I do is, you know, get up to my feet. I automatically know where I am for some reason. Like we all came from there or something, or like life is just a vacation or something, you know, in front of heaven's gates. So I wake up, run up to the gates and whatnot. You know, I'm begging for him to let me stay, you know, because I don't want to be back here. You know, who does? It's a shame that people got to die to finally find out the truth, which is, you know, there is, you know, supposed, I guess you would call it life after death, but, you know, hard to explain and whatnot.
Okay, well, let me get into you, Jeff. The calls are just rolling in here. And, Sergio, you came back. And, Jeff, how many people come back? Quite a bit?
Yeah, sure. The near-death experience is another one of these powerful supernatural occurrences that have such an effect on people, they never forget it. You know, skeptics will say, well, did you actually die or were you just that close? I mean, obviously you didn't technically die if you come back, but the tunnel effect that people describe, some of the similarities, you know, between the being embraced by a white light, these stories go on and on. I actually talked to someone not that long ago who said it was not a pleasant experience, that he saw what he can only describe as a hellish landscape, where he saw He was in a car accident with a friend of his who died instantly, and the person who came back suffered traumatic head injuries, but saw a hellish landscape where his friend was being tortured by just awful faces that he said just give him a shudder to think about, and then he came back from it, and he doesn't quite know what that means. You know, everybody describes this beautiful experience. He didn't have that. It was awful. I've heard a couple of others, much more rare, but that happens too. It's not always pretty.
Is death suffocation, or do you just go? You just black out and you're gone.
I don't know, George. I haven't died yet.
Well, no.
Yeah, no, I don't know. I really don't. You know, I'd like to think that it's usually, for most people, a pleasant transition. I would like to think that it's, you know, just as Sergio described, just a, you know, a waking up from a dream and an exhale and a smooth, you know, transition.
Without missing
process.
A beat. It just
yeah, flows. And that's got to be so. I remember seeing my grandfather after he had passed away in his sleep, and he didn't look like he was in pain or anything. It just, he was, you know, very peaceful, and he just went. I'd like to think that that's how it's going to be for most people.
Let's go to Lava Hot Springs in Idaho. Kat, you're with us on
Hi.
Coast to Coast. Hey, Kat.
Hi, George and Jeff.
Hi.
I live with a ghost. I had a boy that got killed on a motorcycle when he was 22 years old. And I'm a palm reader, so I was down at the psychic fair in Salt Lake City, and the girl showed me how to use a pendulum, and I can pull him in on the pendulum. Do you know how to talk to spirits with your pendulum? You know how to use a pendulum.
I've seen it done, sure. You might say clockwise for yes, counterclockwise for no,
that's
those kind of things.
It's only a yes and no answer.
Sure.
So I asked it the other day, and I only bring him in. You have to be careful with the pendulum not to let the dark spirits come in on it. You have to put it in the freezer for about 3 or 4 days.
In the freezer? Why?
I don't know. And that's what the psychic girls have told me. You got to put it in the freezer, or else put sea salt on, or put it in the sun for 3 days.
Next to the margarita mix, right?
I've never heard of that.
Off
yeah.
of it. Anyway, I had one that was unclean, and I was getting dark spirits. But when I cleaned it up, put it in the freezer, then I can just get him on it.
Hmm.
I know it's him. Then I can use it out when I'm talking to my people. I'm a hand reader, and so I ask him questions, and he asks their guardian angel questions, and you know. They'll give us the names and everything. Now, I'm doing this without knowing what their names are. I'm not psychic. And I'm talking to my son on the pendulum, and he's talking to their guardian angel spirit. Did you know that your guardian angel shows in your left hand?
It's on the inside
of your lifeline, and you'll have a parallel line that comes down, and it touches on your lifeline at the age you were when a loved one died. George will have... In his hand, he'll have on his lifeline, he'll have a little break in. Didn't you have an out-of-body experience, George?
When I was 11.
Sure, that's right. Just in between your thumb and your index finger, your lifeline's the one that goes around your thumb. And you'll have a little break. It'll be an overlapped line in there. That'll be an out-of-body experience.
I'll have to have you check out my hand.
As we all stare at our thumbs.
Well, I'd give you my emails, but I don't want to, you can't crash my computer. Jeff, do you have a website where I can email you? And I'll have you send your hand, and I'll show you how to use it.
Well, I need my hand. I got to type.
Send your hand. What's your give out your website again.
It's ghostvillage.com, and you can email me at info@ghostvillage.com.
Let's go to Dominic now. Thank you, Kat, in Youngstown, Ohio. Dominic, good morning.
Hey, morning.
Hi there.
Hi. What I was wondering was, have you heard any cases of just a specific individual being haunted?
Yeah, I mean, there's a saying, you know, that places aren't haunted, people are. I disagree with that, but I also accept that some people are very sensitive to this kind of thing and might perceive that they're haunted. But maybe they're seeing things that the rest of us don't see. Or maybe there is some attachment, something going on with one specific spirit or ghost that seems to be attracted to one person. I have heard of that. I think it's a lot more rare than a location being haunted, but I have heard of it, yeah.
Tell me about the seances you've been at as a witness, as a journalist.
Yeah, I've witnessed, you know, a table-tipping seance. I've witnessed Ouija board seances, and I've witnessed, you know, a psychic circle seance. And everything from, you know, the table tipping where, I don't know, the jury's still out on that one. I wasn't really convinced
And what is table tipping?
Table tipping is where a group of people might put their hands on a small table and it starts rocking and you can ask questions and it'll move around, pretty much like a planchette on a Ouija board, except it's a group activity.
Can that be hoaxed?
Oh, easily.
Okay.
Too easily, and that's probably why I wasn't convinced. The psychic seance, where it was, you know, your traditional Victorian seance, sitting around a table with a candle, I think that was a little more interesting because, you know, the psychic's voice changed. Now, whether it was just a hoax or not, I'm not 100% sure, but at the same time, people certainly believe that something came through. And as someone watching it, I could see that people were shifting in their seat and perking their eyebrows up and seemed at least in tune with what was going on. That they thought it was real, for sure.
Let's go to Pengrove, California. Hello, Amy. It's your turn.
Oh, man. I've had to turn the lights on because this happened to my aunt up in Temagami, Ontario.
Mm-hmm.
Have you ever seen those little swamp-like lakes with the lily pads and it's all stumpy and kind of scary looking?
Sure. Everybody.
Yeah, well, she and my uncle, they went camping. They took their little trailer, and instead of staying with the groups of trailers, he wanted to go a little further out near the swamp area, but it was in the meadow, but they could still see the rest of the trailers, and it was really hot and muggy that night, and you know how these little bathrooms, they got the little windows that just slide down?
Right.
And so she's in the bathroom, and she's sitting there reading her magazine, and the window's open, and it's very hot and muggy, and then she's sitting there, and she said she started to feel kind of nervous, and she dropped her magazine, and just as she was bending down, she felt this chill, and almost like something flew past her hair. She always used to wear her hair in a bun with these chopsticks in them, and so she picks her magazine up, and she feels nervous, and then she got out of the bathroom. And her husband looked at her, and he says, "What happened to you?" And she says, "What do you mean?" He says, "Well, your hair is half falling out or falling down." And she put her hand up, and there was one chopstick. And she thought, it probably fell in the bathroom. Well, she goes to check the next morning. It wasn't there on the floor. The window, you know, was down. It had stopped raining and everything. Anyway, they're getting ready to discamp, leave camp, and the husband went around the back, and he called out. He says, "Your chopstick's out here, and it's really strange because it's standing upright." And he says, "There's the strangest looking footprint or paw print or whatever." And he's a hunter. He knows bear prints and all that. And this was a print. It was like almost 13, 14 inches. And here's this, her hair, you know what these chopsticks look like, eh?
Yeah.
Yeah, well, it's standing right up, right next to this paw print that was left in the mud. There was still some water in it. And, well, then she really felt nervous. And when they went back into town or where you leave, she asked the ranger, she said, "Do you have any big creatures living in the woods or anything strange ever happen out here?" And she says, "Well, yeah, we had a young woman was camping and got killed in the meadow." And she said, "How? Was it a bear?" And they said, "We don't know. They found her with a wooden splinter through her heart."
Wow.
And my aunt, the back crown of her head went gray overnight. Well, almost white. Now, what on earth was that? So, I won't sit in a trailer bathroom with a window open because I had the feeling that whatever, and it had to be something tangible. It was tall enough to look in, and it reached in to grab. I don't know, but she bent down at the right moment, and I tell you, that really scared the jeebers out of me. And I won't go camping unless I'm right in the middle of a group of people.
Isn't that something, George? You know, the way, you know, we have friends, colleagues, family that have these powerful experiences.
Yep.
They tell others about it. Now they're on coast to coast, and oh my, a whole lot of other people heard about it, and it grows, and we hear about the location, and some people want to seek it out, and other people now are going to be very careful when they're in a trailer bathroom.
Hey, you've got a mystery weekend coming up, by the way.
I do, yeah, the Mass Mystery Weekend, October 16th to 18th in Watertown, Massachusetts. It's a great event. Tim Banal, who's a good friend of the Coast to Coast show,
sure is.
Is putting it on, and I'm excited to speak there, as I've done for the last 3 years in a row, and it's always a wonderful event if people want to go here. Nick Redfern, who's on your show all the time, and Lauren Coleman, it should just be a great event.
Super. And you've also got some kind of seven-hour live investigation. What's that all about?
Yeah, the Ghost Adventure show on the Travel Channel is going to be doing a live seven-hour investigation of the Trans-Allegheny Lunatic Asylum in Weston, West Virginia, 8 p.m. to 3 a.m. on Friday, October 30th. And I've worked for that show for the first two seasons that it's been on the air, and I'll actually be on camera for that. So if you want to watch 7 hours of investigating a giant asylum in West Virginia, we'll be there. You can interact in the chat room. You can watch it live on the Travel Channel, and I'll be there talking about the history of the place.
How can we interact with you? Because we'll be live that night with Coast to Coast. It's on a Friday. How can we interact with you while you're live doing that? We got to figure that out.
Yeah, well, you know, I could probably check in with a cell phone or something like that.
That would be interesting to watch you on TV talking to us.
Yeah. Shout out to George. What's going on? As Say they pull hi. Me off with the hook.
Let's go to Jackson, Mississippi. He just hung up. So we'll go to you, Chris. Take it away. Hi, Chris.
Hey, how's it going?
Good.
Good. Jeff, I know you talked a little about it, Waverly. Have you seen the film Death Tunnel?
Is that based on the Death Tunnel at Waverly?
Yes, it is a lower-budget film, sort of a formula horror in which five good-looking college girls are kidnapped and locked down there overnight as part of like an initiation stunt. And if you read the online interviews of the actresses in it, they don't want to go back there.
That's interesting.
It's a film that definitely warrants a sequel. And I mean, I'm friendly with Rosemary Ellen Guiley, and I asked her about it, and she said it's a very creepy place and understands why they don't want to go back.
Oh, I've been in it. It is creepy. And this tunnel was built so they could quietly move the bodies out of there without disturbing the other patients who, I mean, you could, 1 an hour could be dying during the height of Waverly. And, you know, you just don't want to see body after body being brought out. This is a practice that goes on today. If you go to nursing homes, there's always a quiet back entrance to remove people so it doesn't make a scene. But that tunnel is creepy. It's hundreds of feet long. The long gurney, eerie place.
Scary times, Jeff Belanger, scary times. And we'll be back in a moment with Open Lines on Coast to Coast AM.